consciousness, maybe, a devil you know is better than a devil you don't know. But the thing is, it's a case of forgetting the self, the first thing about it. Also, as I myself, I'm a bit of a favourite. I think if you're to be shot, you won't be poisoned. So I'm rather, I don't fear going up in a plane or anything. I just know that whichever way your end is to come, it'll come whichever way round it is. And don't matter how many people come down in planes and things, I don't think it's anything to be afraid of, really. But I think it's from the fear angle of not knowing what death is or what is beyond it or anything to that degree, or pleasant or unpleasant, we don't know.
So it's fear of the unknown, really.
Yes, it is. I mean, even if you're a beggar in the street at the moment, you know what your fate is and you know what you've got to do and what you can't do and all the rest of it. But beyond that, beyond death, you don't know what, or at least some people think they don't, or not for sure anyway.
Isn't all fear of the unknown? And don't we attach so much onto fear? I think we've said this before. If perhaps we could really come to terms with fear itself and see the nature of fear, then fear of aeroplanes, fear of anything could possibly come to an end. And if one really saw what fear really means, even the fear of death would go. Perhaps this might be so.
Are you sure that it is an aversion of death, the fear you have? Or could it be fear of fear, or fear of being hurt?
Well, it really couldn't be fear of fear in my case, because I go consciously, knowing that I'm going to be afraid, and I choose freely to go. To challenge myself again and again every year, two or three times this way. Yeah. I could go other ways by ship.
You're not a masochist, are you?
I might be that. It's just a label, though, isn't it? Masochist.
How much of it is thinking about it? Thinking about what may happen or what may not happen?
More feeling, perhaps.
Or is it afraid of heights?
Or perhaps no faith at all in this world's machinery? But it all comes down to fear of annihilation.
As you said, it surely must be the thinking about it, because if you lived absolutely in the present moment, you wouldn't be able to be afraid, because it's projecting your mind into the possibility of what may happen in the future.
Except that you're not living in the present moment if you know that you're going to catch the plane the day after tomorrow. You've got to, as it were, look at it. Look at this fear for a long time.
Is it only aeroplanes that makes you afraid?
When I'm not driving it myself, when I'm in someone else's hands.
Ah.
I'm driving a car, no fear at all. Has anyone else this fear? Is it only myself?
I think we all have fear to a certain extent.
I feel this.
If we don't admit it, I don't think we are truthful.
Because I notice this when the plane starts off, people pick up a paper or they all act unnaturally, whereas I have been unnatural from the very moment of walking in the plane.
And if it starts sort of falling and climbing, that they all start laughing rather hysterically.
I would like, if we can, to discuss this question of the nature of fear, because is it subjective? In other words, if you were carried semi-conscious onto a plane and you weren't aware what was happening to you, and you came awake before the plane started off, would you become afraid? If you were not aware, in other words, that you were about to fly, is only your knowledge that you are going to fly, going to be taken up in an aeroplane, that makes you afraid? It's your knowledge, it's not the actual fact of flying. It's subjective, surely.
All feelings are subjective.
That's what I was asking. I wonder if it is. I mean, this is a question of the nature of fear, isn't it?
It's being aware of that gravity is pulling me down.
Yes.
And I'm defying gravity at every second of the flight.
So it's in your imagination, really. I'm not
trying
it, but
it's
in your imagination.
Probably that comes into it.
Nobody compels you, no force compels you to be afraid of flying or anything else. It's just that your fear has attached itself to the act of flying.
Yes.
Could it be fear of the illogical? Because you are not controlling the plane yourself, yet it is being controlled.
Yes.
And you are defying gravity, which is impossible, yet there you are defying it. And you are in this illogical situation which can't be easily accepted, although it's okay, apparently.
Yes. For instance, when I see a stewardess go with a tray of drinks into the, we'll call it the driver, the pilot's cabin, I think, good gracious, are we all right?
But I think that the most important question we should ask ourselves is, is there anyone amongst us who is without fear of anything? I mean, in Anne's case, she's afraid of flying. Is there any other fear in anybody else? A fear for ourselves or for others? And then I think we come to the conclusion that nobody is quite without fear.
Is it just a question of what we attach this free-flowing fear to?
No, I think it's a natural instinct of the natural human being. As soon as we have realized transcendence and action, I think we are free of that fear.
Is this fear a fear of losing something? In death, losing the body? Or losing the image, losing faith in a situation?
May I just remind you at this stage of the question that Anne formulated herself? Why is one afraid of coming to an end? And Feroz added, why have we an aversion to death? Just to remind you that that was the initial question.
This implied, doesn't it, Anne, that you're afraid of death in circumstances other than flying?
Doesn't seem to be so.
No, this is what
doesn't
I want
to... Doesn't seem to be so at all. Not hospitals or operation or anything else. Just up there.
It seems to me that the fact that it's only in flying that you're afraid of
that's
complicating the problem. If there's a straightforward fear of death in any circumstances, I think our way ahead would be somewhat clearer.
I'm sorry, Philip, I don't understand that.
But if your fear was simply a fear of death, full stop,
yes,
I think we'd be able to make progress much quicker.
Yes.
But in the circumstances, it's a fear of death connected only with flying.
Yes.
I don't know whether this will help, but I have this same thing that Anne has, but it is connected not with the fear of death, but with a sort of insecurity which I have over all forms of travel, of sort of not getting to the journey's end, as it were. You know, a sort of sense of a homing sense, I might put it, if it were. It's something that I can't explain, but it's something that I've always had, or had for a great many years. And I mean, I overcome it. I travel a lot, but I always, from time to time, I'm subject, if I'm not thinking about something which is occupying me in other ways, to this sort of, you know, oh, suppose we don't get there. You know.
Fatalistic.
Or is it a feeling of business that's not finished, not done?
It's
being cut up in
yes.
before your conscious
caught,
moments come.
Caught in circumstances in which you're unprepared for the events that are going to happen.
Isn't it rather similar to taking a long drive somewhere? Driving up to Scotland, shall we say, what one wants to get to the end of the journey.
Perhaps it's the suddenness of it, then, perhaps.
It could be a sort of feeling of being intermediate between two realities, one before you left, the other after you left, and a sort of monotony of sort of not actually doing anything, but you hope that something is going to come of it.
Back to the word aversion. There's more to it than just fear in aversion. It's a turning away, isn't this what aversion means? Therefore, perhaps one should study it in two ways, you know, not just along the lines of fear, but fear plus turning away, which makes the problem a little different. Perhaps one could see it from a different angle.
Yes. That turning away seems to be that the fear is in the future, thinking about the end of the journey. And it was mentioned that when somebody was driving, they didn't experience the fear of a crash, because perhaps their mind was brought down to the present moment, the driving, instead of thinking ahead, wondering what might happen.
I think what seems to have come out up to now is the fact that fear is an illogical thing. We've concentrated rather on this problem of travel, particularly travel by air. But fear can attach itself to all kinds of things. I happen to be afraid of public speaking. I hate public speaking. You know, I loathe it in advance. Now, this is a different kind of fear, but it's fear, all right. And I suppose we all have our different forms of fear. Why is fear so illogical?
Is that fear of failing?
Possibly.
In your own eyes?
Possibly, quite possibly.
So
or fear of doing something or attempting something which I may fail at.
So one has perhaps a preconceived idea of how one ought to appear giving a speech.
Yes.
Aren't they both possibly the fear of both fears? Fear a lack of faith in your fellow human beings. In other words, that you haven't faith in the pilot of the aeroplane. You haven't faith in, if you get stuck in the middle of a journey, that the people that you meet will be able to get you out of your difficulty, and in of the people that you're speaking to, that they may receive you unkindly.
Mm-hmm. Well, in this you're projecting outwards, are you not? Instead of, in a way, looking in here and seeing the thing behind that, which is your own insecurity. I keep going back to this thing of examining the fear first, to see what the fear is all about before it becomes attached to whatever we're talking about, whatever our own special fears. As Ingrid says, we all have our own special fears. But if we could really see what fear is, I think it must be very, very difficult, but at least I think some of this, some of the problems would at least be
fear, surely, is me. I'm sitting there in this plane, a mass of fear. I am fear, and it's not something that I'm looking at. It is me, myself. And I'm sort of sitting there, conscious of it. looking at my watch, longing for it to be over.
So is it connected with a want for something else? A want for something to be different? Is it connected with like and dislike and pleasure and pain?
Well, it's just plain honest to goodness fear.
But it comes through thought. I mean, it doesn't... The plane isn't full of fear. Everybody else isn't aware
thinking,
of it.
I'm not thinking, truly. I'm sitting there, totally aware of this lump of fear sitting there.
But is it enveloping everyone in the airplane?
Nothing to
do. In the situation?
Not much glance at the other people. My whole attention isn't on them. It's just this
is within,
great
it's
lump
yourself.
Of fear.
So could it be lack of faith in oneself?
Could be.
I feel that there are two sort of aspects in this. One is a sort of conditioning, a preventive mechanism which keeps suffering away. That is to say, our children, when they first fall, they first have their tumble down the stairs. Before that moment, they're not afraid of the stairs. And after that, they will be. So perhaps this is, and I think that this conditioning sort of goes on, afraid from the bogeyman, and afraid from the gypsy, afraid from this, that, the threats which the parents or teachers exert on the imagination. I think we carry this forward in our adulthood to a certain extent. But there's also, I'm not sure about this, but I experienced once a fear of death, which was very short, very clear. And this was when I was on the top of a big ladder, 14 feet up, and the ladder started to move away from under me. And for a minute, I felt this, that I want to survive. And as soon as this happened, I found myself hanging on the rafter. So this sort of secondary fear translated itself into action, instinctively. And perhaps this is a fear which is not only me, but survival of the species, or maybe, I don't know what it is. But it's quite a different flavor from the fear from being hurt.
Does this not stem from perhaps the desire for self-preservation?
Yes.
The primitive savage is afraid of everything.
Surely that's the most basic instinct we have, self-preservation. Mm-hmm. We jump, we bust towers on top of us, mm-hmm. and thought hasn't come into the process at all, has it? It's so quick.
Yes, I think the circumstances that can give rise to fear are innumerable, just as the circumstances that are likely to endanger any one single aspect of self-preservation are also innumerable, and really it doesn't matter a great deal. I have a suspicion that the actual emotion itself, looking at it, to analyse it and sort of dissect it, is not perhaps a very useful task. What one might better do is to just to observe and to be aware of the fear, so that one sees it coming, one sees it arise to its fullness, and sees it pass away. And as long as one has the fear fully in front of you, and you are attending to it at the here and now level, so that you see it coming and passing away, because after all things are do come into being and then do pass away, then fear, at least that particular fear, is nothing to worry about at all. And similarly, if another fear arises, then the process is gone through again, and that fear is nothing to worry about at all. It just comes and it passes away. So there's no need to get bogged down.
That is the state in which I sit in the aeroplane looking at this thing.
Well, it's
neither come nor go. It's just a constant. I can't attend to things as other people are.
Well, you may well say that you had it. You didn't have it before you got into the plane. You've had it when you got into the plane, and you don't have it now.
No.
So it's something that is transient and passing.
Yes.
Yes, but the essence of fear, I think, is that it can be, at its worst, it can be what you may call transcendental. It can take utter possession of you. It can paralyze the will. It can prevent you doing the right thing. If you happen to cross the road carelessly and you see a car within a few feet of you, your instinct is just as likely to be paralyzed by fear and remain in the spot as it is to jump out of the way.
Yes,
this is paralysis of the will by fear. Mm-hmm. And this frequently happens, I think, in your case probably, Anne, isn't it?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's not as bad as that at all. It isn't as tall in that category.
Not as bad as that.
Paralysis.
But it does happen.
It's just an intellectual fear when I'm going on a plane journey.
So you might possibly...
But I should have to sit there, absolutely still, looking at this and being this for the whole of the journey. And not like all the other people, drinking and laughing and eating.
Well, that's bad enough. It does, in a sense, it does paralyse your will, doesn't
it? Yeah, well, I have to pay attention all the time. Mm. I can't be chatting to other people. It takes me all my time to sit there with myself.
Yes.
You cannot relax?
It is that. That is a... and yet it's a sort of relax. I have to keep it in mind, as it were.
Can you tell me, Anne, what would happen if, while you were flying in this aeroplane, being frightened, a hijacker came along?
I would be paralysed.
which fear would have got the second fear in the
I wonder if anybody here has ever had the experience of being very close to an ending or dying and having no fear at all, physical or any other kind of fear. Simply, just quietly letting go.
Yes.
I had a car accident a couple of years ago, and the car turned over and went down a few yards. And it was just a case of utter surprise at the moment. I didn't feel anything else. Well, the shock set in afterwards. But at the moment, while the car turned over, I was just utterly surprised, nothing else.
Well, I was very ill about 25 years ago, and I think I died because I looked at my body as dispassionately as I'm looking at Firoz's case here, perfectly calmly, as you describe, with utter amazement. It's quite separate from my body.
You've been very well resurrected.
No fear whatever.
I have a friend who suffers exactly the same as you do, and she also went by air because she was going with another friend, and she did this repeatedly, and in the end she came back from one flight and she said to her friend, "Now I am going no more by air." She just couldn't, I mean, she went, she wasn't obviously afraid, she kept it to herself. But she had this fear of flying, and so in the end she gave it up, and she will not fly. It seems to have been just much like yours.
I've decided to keep on flying because I must not overcome, but come to terms with.
It seems a good way.
Yes,
and the nature of something, you sort of have to
challenge myself. I can't just give it up. I should feel a terrible coward.
Do seem in a way to have an aversion to getting down to the question, really, in a sense. We are sort of dissipating a lot of energy, I think, in pinning it onto these particular things. Mm. Could we just hear the question again?
Yes, and shall I preface it by saying that we are concerned with the discovering of the truth? The question, as put by Anne, why is one afraid of coming to an end? Why have we an aversion to death?
in considering the thought of death, would it be possible that we're not so much afraid of losing what we have as gaining, insofar as what we consider to be ourselves is really a holding back of everything else? Sort of holding back to the totality, and this would flood our limited selves and overwhelm us.
So is that not the same as losing oneself?
It's stated in another way. I thought it was dark.
I think it's because we're all not ready to go. If we were all ready and had perfected ourselves, we would be resigned and ready to go. Mm. And therefore we wouldn't be afraid.
I'm still wrestling with this problem of why the fear of death in antithesis is only related to flying. And Krishnamurti keeps coming to mind because this is one of his favourite topics, isn't it, fear?
Mm.
And he says that we're always pushing fear away from it. It's sometime in the future, it's 20 years from now or something like that. But when you're about to take an airplane flight, you're taking off, you presumably have the thought that it could be imminent. It's come that much closer, hasn't it? If the engines fail, the plane drops out of the sky, you're done.
That could happen any day in a car, couldn't it? The wheel could drop off and run into something.
Yes, but this is something you do every day. This is a couple of times a year, perhaps. But,
there isn't a day of my life that goes by that I don't ponder for some time on death.
But the pondering is a mental process, isn't it? You see,
not always. When you're quiet.
And are you averted to the idea? I mean, do you draw back from it when you ponder it? I mean, do you?
No, not at all. Actually, sometimes it would be a happy, what a happy resolution to the whole life.
And perhaps an absorption of death, sort of. Have you an absorption with the, I can't get it out of the thought of death, or the idea of death?
I've always been puzzled as to what happened to me when I was desperately ill, and the doctor said I wouldn't live the night, and that thing happened, that I was completely outside my body. I was perfectly safe, and absolutely.
Well, I've heard of this with other people too, when they've been seriously ill. They were up in the wall looking down on their body.
Perhaps I've thought of it since then. What was that?
Ingrid rightly said that all of us have our fears. And Philip mentioned Krishnaji, who continuously tells us that fear must be in relation to something else. Fear in your case seems to be fear of death, because you use the word of coming to an end, which means a physical death of the body, right? Feroz has spoken to us at great length about death, the consummator, and the inevitable death, which is the ending of the physical body. What is born has got to grow and finally come to an end, because it is finite. We try, don't we, to face this fear out of the relationship, which is very difficult, whether it's a fear of your ending your life in an aeroplane, or my fear of not having enough money to carry on in life, or somebody else's fear of old age, or whatever it is. I think it's true to say that most of us have a fear in relation to something else. And we find it extremely difficult to just face this fear in its entirety, obviously, because if we did, we would be free of it, we would be emancipated. The death aspect, because I suppose all of us have somewhere or the other, deep down, some fear of death. I can only recall my personal experience of being very, very close to death and finding it an extremely pleasant experience. In fact, I was rather sorry when somebody brought me back again, but that's by the by. The death of the physical body is something that we can't escape. I don't know how you become reconciled to it. The Buddhists do these meditations in cemeteries, which I'm sure is very helpful. It certainly shows you the impermanence of the physical body. I personally have watched and seen and been present when many people have died, some appearing to be in great agonies, others passing out very peacefully. Death, a consummator, Rose is the best expert on this aspect. For myself, I've had a glimpse of it when I have been able in meditation to become at one with a dualistic attitude of my own mind. And I see that I am out of chronological time at this particular moment, and I see the true relationship of the dual, and this transforming of the dual obviously implies some sort of ending, which is death, is it not? Now, I don't know if this is in any way helpful for you to consider or for us to consider. Perhaps I haven't put it forward, certainly not as well as a Krishnaji or a Feroz could, but I've done my best to present something as I see it.
Let me say just a word here. Relate this inquiry of the fear of death to clinging to life, clinging to the continuity of this organism, which we know from experience must inevitably die.
Feroz, doesn't age make a lot of difference here? I mean, don't you think that at the age of 35 or 40, one has a bigger aversion against death than when one is perhaps 70 or 80, and when one has the feeling that naturally one lifespan has fulfilled its purpose to a certain extent, but being just sort of pulled out of an active life where you have the feeling one can do a lot still, and a lot still is to be done, and one is just not ready for it. I think there's a big difference.
But not always, because circumstances can alter, Ingrid. I mean, not everybody has that feeling. I was very young when this happened to me, and I was quite happy to go on.
I'd like to add to your meditative experience, which I think is very, very significant. I think that doing something of that ilk is very useful for the purpose of observing whatever emotion or whatever tends to arise. And of course, fear is one of those things that does quite definitely, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, face you every now and then during periods of meditation. I would offer two experiences. One was doing walking meditation, and that was where you observed your feet on your walking movement, and coming to a quite extraordinary panic, a feeling of the most intense fear, and I was, you know, it was in a cold sweat. And the worst part about it was that I thought I'd lost the knack of looking at it. And I forgot about looking how to look at it, looked at it, and it just fizzled out like that. It just dissolved completely. And that was quite an extraordinary experience. The second one was in meditation itself. And that was an experience of after a period of what I would describe as sinking down, coming to just a gap with a fading out. And the fear that arose then was just too intense for me to face. An absolute shock. But that was a, you know, a fading. There was a fading out, and I just couldn't face it. It's just impossible.
Your walking experience is very interesting, because I've done this, and the reasoning behind that is that you should feel more at home in your body. So it's very interesting that fear should have caught up with you there.
But the fading out, mm-hmm. the fear that I wouldn't come back from a particular experience, was just too intense to enable me to continue, even to enable me to observe it any further at that particular time.
Yes, I remember the first time that happened to me. I thought I died. I was quite sure when I came back. I had
these two examples relate very well to Feroz's point about the attachment. That for a moment the attachment was lost, perhaps. And in came the fear and wanting to get back.
You mean with the walking, Ruth, or with
the... Yes, I do. I mean with the walking.
But the practice of Satipatthana with this mindful walking, as explained to me by a bhikkhu who practiced this, was taught this in Burma, the idea behind it is that you should be at peace and familiar with every aspect of the body. So it's interesting that yeah. should have happened.
Goodbye, perhaps. By perhaps observing the body in this way, one loses the attachment. It isn't my body anymore.
And that, you mean, produced the fear.
I think that another point that just occurred to me, I've just remembered, was that often, I did it just for a month, actually. It was not very long, really. But you do sort of go through phases where things become unfamiliar. That is, that this totally, really everything does sort of after a while become completely unfamiliar. And prior to that, you get a lot of fear coming out because of this unfamiliarity, because something is happening and you don't know what it is, and fear arises. And then, of course, as I said, if you watch it, you have to cling on to it, hold on to it, don't let it go. You know, don't let it out of an inch out of your sight. Keep it there, definite, straight in front of you. Otherwise, you're lost. You see, you'll fly off into a tangent, and or it'll get behind you, and you've had it. You see, so you've got to keep it absolutely tight in your grips, and then it's just sort of holding it like that, not sort of repressing it, but just observing it, so that it's fully in your mind, fully in your consciousness. Then, of course, there is, you know, the fact that there is something looking at it, and it's out there, you see, means that it can't harm you. And as you point out, it's the familiarity, that something, when something unfamiliar begins to take place. fear tends to arise.